Hey, and welcome to Tintin and Trevor White Sailing. Today we're located in the beautiful location of Picton, the top of the North Island of New Zealand. Been here for about a week, trying to resolve some issues with the yacht. We just recently sailed across from Hobart, and on that trip we got absolutely flogged. You know, the three autopilots, including the wind vane, snapped off the back of the boat. The other two were just shredded, broken, electronics, took away through the cockpit, like 200 litres of water into the boat, fried all the electronics. I've just spent quite a bit of time and money replacing gear and fixing things. So today was my first day in about 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, where I didn't fix anything. You know, it's quite a relief. I can actually start planning for the rest of the sail. So, you know, New Zealand was the halfway mark to Tahiti, but, you know, the weather has been so goddamn shithouse that I think we're going to pay off Tahiti and head north. It's 4 to 6 weeks to Tahiti. It's about a week and a half to Fiji. So Fiji is looking mighty attractive at the moment. And I guess the things that boat people or people who are interested in sailing think about, you know, like how long do you spend at sea and how long do you want to spend at sea? Some people love it, other people don't. You know, I enjoy time at sea, but I don't enjoy getting flogged mercilessly every couple of days on a long passage. And that was a trip from Hobart to Nelson. It was just punishing. We had a couple of days of no wind. The rest of it was just hard work. That was a 12-day trip. So next trip, I'm going to try and make it a little bit more enjoyable, and I'm going to see if we can get a weather window. So we've only got about 5 to 6 day trip, let's say 7. We should be able to try for a decent weather window in that period and get up to Fiji without breaking too much gear. So the boat is in pretty good nick. Tomorrow I've got a brand new rib turning up from a local chap here, David, from Nautilus Inflatables. Nice guy, been in the industry for a long time, developed his own range, and yeah, I'm pretty impressed. I've just spent a few grand on a brand new little rib. The last one, I thought I would get another season out of it. I honestly thought I'm going to take that to Tahiti and at the end of the season, we'll upgrade. But no, I was in Durival Island, just north of Nelson. Yeah, just run up the river. We were humming along, a little 10 horsepower on the bike back. So, yeah, it was scooting along. You know, glassy water, beautiful. But had a little bit of a slow leak, so I thought, I'll put a bit of air in. Put the pump on it, put three pumps into it, and the front seam popped. Wouldn't believe it. And that's in addition to a large patch on the starboard seam and a smaller patch on the port seam. So patchy was rooted. It was fixable, but the last patch I put on was 4 feet long and probably cost more than the boat. So, yeah, we decided to retire patchy and Mark from the Picton Marina here gave me a hand to take it to the local tip, which cost me $20. And I can't say they've got a better home. It's going into landfill, which is good, though. You know, like, we're not polluting the sea with plastic. And last time I was in Queensland, up in the Great Barrier Reef on the eastern side of Palm Island, I did a stop anchored there with a few crew, and we did a plastics cleanup. And in 2 hours, we gathered 500 kilos of plastic in a 1 kilometre section of beach. And one large piece of that plastic was a bloody inflatable someone had tossed overboard. So, yeah, that's not me. I'm trying to be responsible and reduce any plastics getting into the ocean. And where I can, I try to pick them up and dispose of it safely and efficiently in landfill, where it's not going to get back into the oceans, and maybe one day it'll be recycled into new products. We will see. So, yeah, where to from here? Dinghy arrives tomorrow, hopefully. The boat's looking good. I've done the last 2 days of walking up to the supermarket and buying food. That's what I tend to do. I tend to just put a backpack on, a couple of bags, walk the 2 Ks to the supermarket, buy some food, walk back, gives you exercise, see town, have a coffee. So yeah, the local supermarket's not too bad, and I've managed to get, quite a few tins, some more pasta, muesli, wraps. What else have we put in? We started to put a bit of tin fruit on board, going to the tropics, a bit warmer. Up until now, it's been potatoes, meats, hearty vegetables, lots of pasta. But yeah, I'm looking forward to a slightly lighter, less dodgy diet of fish and fruit, coconuts, maybe even some salads. That would be delightful. But until we get there, it's bloody cold here in Picton. Today was probably about 2 or 3 degrees in the morning when I went for a walk. At the moment, I'd say it's about 5 degrees, and we've been getting a few frosts, so it's time to get the hell out of here and head north. I think ski season starts next week, so that is a good idea, or a good indicator rather, that a yacht should not be here. The other problem I've got, because it's cold, got a lot of condensation inside the boat, which is leading to mold, and I've been spending a lot of time just going around cleaning the mold up, spraying it with, I use a combination of bleach and vinegar, diluted, and yeah, but I'm getting sick and tired of cleaning up mold. So it is time to go north, and at the moment we've just been getting flogged with large low pressure weather systems. They've come across from Australia. The last one come through the marina here at probably 50 knots. It was end up putting new, not new, but additional lines on the yacht. So we didn't snap a line. Boat in front of me lost its front bow line and nearly crashed into a $20 million small super yacht. So yeah, I'm glad that wasn't me. Managed to get that boat tied up again before it had caused any damage. But yeah, these things happen in marinas, and they happen anywhere, like particularly in New Zealand, when the wind comes off the mountains and howls down through the valleys, it hits your boat with a tremendous amount of force. I spent a few days on anchor over in Dhiraavel Island, and one of the days we had a lot of wind, and we had probably 3 or 4 days of on anchor just swinging around. It was very uncomfortable. It was cold. It was wet. It was yeah. It's not pleasant sailing when in those conditions. But I'm looking forward to a bit of a weather window, and that's what we're going to plan for, is to find a nice weather window to get from here up to probably the Bay of Islands, or at least to Auckland, maybe. And from there, we need to establish whether we jump off there to go north, or whether we go to Upwa and jump off from there, which seems to be pretty popular for a lot of New Zealand people. I guess it's probably closer to Fiji, but you sort of got to weigh up, is it worth it? A couple hundred kilometres crawling up the coast, and the problem is when you stop at places, you don't stop for 12 hours. You go in there, you go to the pub, you wake up in the morning, you go, oh, this is nice, so I'm gonna hang around for a day now. And then the next weather pattern comes through, it's blowing like a dog. You don't want to go out in shit conditions. Let's face it, no one ever does. So a 1 day stopover turns into 3 or 4 days, and if you happen to get caught in the middle of a really large weather system, or 2 weather systems creating a bit of a squeeze, you could be there for a week or 2 weeks. The chap just down from me, he's trying to get across to Tahiti, a Canadian. He just goes Tahiti to Hawaii and then back up to Canada. He's been here for a month waiting for a weather pattern to jump across. So hearing that just made me think, yeah, like Tahiti, I'm just not going to waste my time. I've left it too late in the season. I spent too much time in Hobart and Tasmania, which was beautiful, but again, that was getting cold, and it's even colder here. So, for those of you new to sailing, I guess, the things to think about when you're sailing is weather and tides, where you're going to get into when you do leave a safe harbour, like in Picton here, where a boat like mine, which travels about 5 knots, I've got to go probably about 4 hours before I clear the sounds. It's the fjord-like structures of on this part of the world, until I get into open sea. So, be 4 or 5 hours, depending on the wind. And that's if the wind's with me. If the wind's against me, I'm down to about 3 knots. And if the tide's against me, I could be going backwards. So, yeah, you've got to factor in leaving the marina, trying to get the wind in your direction, trying to make sure that you get through any tidal areas with the tide, because if you don't, there's a Torres Strait, I believe it's called. I've got to get through there, and if it's against me, I probably can't even get through there with a 5 knot boat speed. So the factors I have to think about. At the moment, I've got a big fat ass motorboat parked in front of me, so I can't even get out of the pen. But yeah, that's just a consideration. But when we do leave, at the moment I'm solo. My beautiful Dutch girlfriend just bailed on me. It was getting too cold, so she went back to sunny Holland. Who the hell would thought? Sunny and Holland in the same sentence. But yeah, they do have a summer over there. So she's over there enjoying summer, and I'm freezing my ass off in New Zealand. So yeah, solo, and do I go solo up the east coast of New Zealand, or North Island of New Zealand, or do I pick up crew? And at the moment, I'm enjoying being on the boat by myself. Like, I haven't got her shit all over the boat. I've got room to move. I can sit and read. If I take on crew, then I've got someone taking up my space. I've got to teach them about the boat. I've got questions about the boat. They might be interesting, so yeah, I want to know about them. They want to know about me. We'll end up going to the pub, because you always do with crew, like. And then yeah, they need to learn about the boat, so I've got to spend time teaching them how this boat operates, safety system, safety gear, and that's before we leave the dock. Then when we're out at sea, like, you've got an extra set of eyes in the back of your head taking care of these people, because that is certainly a responsibility. There's the odd exception where you get a really seaworthy guy or girl and you don't need to do much, but it's a different boat, so they're not familiar with it. They've got to learn it, and even the most capable person takes about a week to learn a new boat. It's very hard to step onto a boat and just and know things. I mean, this boat's 50 years old. It's got 50 years worth of add-ons and little quirks and gremlins. So yeah, I know it intimately, but the new crew certainly do not. So yeah, do you take on crew or do you not take on crew? Do you just solo? I don't mind soloing in the ocean. Like, it's got AIS, so I see where the ships are. They see where I am. Haven't had too many close encounters since I've had AIS, except from bloody fishing boats. But that's normal. But with crew, like, you've got an extra set of eyes for cruising up the coastline. Now, I typically get about 10 miles off, so I don't have to worry about dinghies so much. I've just got to worry about fishing boats and ships. Fishing boats, a lot of them don't run AIS. They don't have to in many places. Ships all have to and tend to. But yeah, it's probably 3, maybe 4 days from here to the next port, up near Auckland somewhere. There's probably another place in between, but a lot of these ports are tidal. If the weather's perfect, yeah, you can nip in. But again, do you get caught there? Do you end up spending 3 or 4 days in a place that you only really want to spend 12 hours? Or do you just keep sailing and suck up a bit of bad weather to get to the location where you want to be? And to be honest, I tend to do that more often, is just suck up 24 hours of gale force winds to get to where I want, unless it's the wind's blowing against me, and then I will seek shelter somewhere. But yeah, crew or no crew, the question. The weather is the other question. Tides, need to work that stuff out and try and get a bit of a timeline on the tides and wind. And the other thing you got down here in Picton, you've got these big ass ferries. They're moving quite a few passengers, cars and trucks. They're operating like every 3 hours there's a ferry running. Weekends there's more. If you've got one going, you've got one coming. So you've got to keep a pretty close eye out on those guys. They're doing 20 knots, so they're no slouch. Apparently they have right of way, and let's face it, they're bigger than me, so they always have right of way. They're on a time schedule, but they do have AIS and they have a radio, so we can talk to them if we need to, and they can see me, which is bonus. They can still manoeuvre faster than I can, but they are certainly a consideration when we're going through some of the narrow passages, and keeping out of their way. And not trying to go through somewhere where they're going through and going to create wake or problems for me. But yeah, so from here to the North Island, maybe the Bay of Islands, maybe Auckland, maybe Apewa, maybe another harbour that I haven't established yet. And got to start looking seriously at crew. I mean, the next thing after that is looking seriously at Fiji customs and immigration requirements. And again, if I take on crew, I've got other implications of bringing them into a country. I typically don't keep crew for that long. I mean, I want them to sail with a passage, and then maybe a few weeks in the location, then I want them to leave. I don't want to hang with people unless there's some stunning 6-foot-tall blonde with a big rack. And looks great in a bikini, but typically they're not. So, yeah, I have crew go to a location and leave. And the problem with going to Tahiti or Fiji or a lot of these places is there's an expectation that they will either have a airline ticket to depart, or they will move on to a new vessel, and then you have issues with customs of managing that expectation. You've got to manage that with crew, because if you've got young crew, like a lot of them don't have a lot of money. They have an idea that they're just going to jump on and Robinson Crusoe their way around the world. They can turn up in Fiji and they can just meander around and jump on boat to boat. But the reality is the local authorities don't want that. They want to manage people on boats. They want to manage where people on boats go, who they see, what they do. They don't want people moving drugs, guns, or anything else around their countries and their islands. Some places they don't even want you to visit. When I was looking at researching Tahiti, I was looking at making landfall at Rapa'ita, and I can't make landfall there. That's no longer an option. So I had to make landfall at one of the other islands near to there. And then, if I wanted to go to Rapa'ita, which is a southern island in the French Polynesian archipelago, I need to go a couple hundred miles southeast, which is just a pain in the ass. And for a while, they weren't even taking boats, and that wasn't to do with COVID. It was just some, regional choice, and that is certainly their choice. It's their home. It's their location. They might have been getting too many boats. But these are the challenges of being on a yacht. And today it's not so bad. I mean, we have the internet. We have reasonable up-to-date communications, but we also have a lot of yachts, a lot of yachts, a lot of boats, a lot of bigger boats like cruise ships. Some locations like boats because it brings money into the economy. Others don't because it spoils the view. More recently, there's been some animosity towards yachts in French Polynesia, and I think that's a hangover from the COVID era where both just got stuck there, and everybody's feelings and tensions were aggravated, and there's been some violence between locals and boaties or yachties. Not sure the same in Fiji. Fijians tend to be pretty laid back, but you know, obviously they want you to spend money in their locations, which I'm more than happy to do. I like supporting the local economy wherever I go, and hence the fact that I'm buying a boat here locally. I think it's a good deal. I think I'm getting a better deal here than I could have if I had bought it in Australia. So glad I waited and tries to squeeze another season out of my little beaten up, dinghy called Patch. But that's tonight's job, is going through the Fiji immigration website, looking through it, trying to understand all of the implications, looking at the potential crew on Crew Finder, which is a service I use. I find it pretty reliable, although it is bloody expensive. You know, as a skipper looking to find crew, I need to pay, I think it's $80 a month, and I find that a little bit steep for what it is. These websites just seem to, they get a following and then they just start gouging you. The other one I'm looking at is, girlfriend's putting ads on Facebook. So we might find some people on Facebook also, which I've done in the past. I can put it out to friends. At the moment, most of my friends and mates are off doing their own thing, or they've gone over to Europe for the summer, or they don't really want to sail in, New Zealand when you're freezing your ass off. They probably say yes to French Polynesia or Fiji when it's warm and clear water and the beer's cold and the girls are hot. But, I can't blame them. I don't want to fly into New Zealand and freeze my ass off just to sail to Fiji. I'd rather fly into Fiji and just sail around Fiji. But, you've got to get there. And that's one of the problems with owning a boat. You can't just get that thing to magically appear unless you're a reasonably wealthy person. You can pay a skipper to do the shit passages for you. I'm afraid that's not me. And to be honest, I view the boat as a bit of a man shed. It keeps me busy, keeps me active, keeps me little problems. Either fixing autopilots is what I've been doing the last couple of days, rebuilding all the steering system because it got a little bit worn out in the last trip with the heavy weather. Rewelding the wind vane mounts on the back, which snapped. Rewiring a 50-year-old autopilot motor to accommodate a brand new controller, and then trying to work out the electronics diagrams to stop shorting out the fuses, which took a few days and a couple of bottles of wine to an electrical engineer who just happened to be on another boat, thankfully. Fixing leaks, the next couple of jobs are I need to service the little Honda generator, I need to service the outboard motor, and I need to do an oil change on the main engine. So if nothing else, you learn a number of skills if you don't have them already. And if you are looking at sailing, you don't have those skills, well, these are the things you need to learn, or you need to pay someone to do. And I always think it's difficult to pay someone to do these things when there's no one around who can do them for you. So definitely skills that need to be acquired, and it's not that difficult. I mean, there's plenty of books. There's a guy called Nigel Calder, a US bloke who puts out a fantastic boat maintenance book. I've got one that's about 25 years old when I bought my first boat, and I still have the same copy and I still reference it when I'm ripping apart mechanical things. But, he's certainly put out a few upgrades, and I'll have to reference those for things like lithium batteries and that. But yeah, boats keep your mind active. They really do. They stop you from becoming a vegetable, watching shit TV and learning nothing, where they keep you learning something new every day, even to the point of me starting a podcast. I had a bit of spare time. I thought I wouldn't mind just talking shit to myself for a half an hour, and then maybe I can interact with other people through this forum where we can create some questions and answers, and maybe share some of the dumb shit that I've learnt over the last 20, 30 years. Maybe they don't have to make the same mistakes I've made. And also, I'm hoping that I can learn a few things of other people so I don't have to make those mistakes. But I think one of the joys of boating is you still learn things all the time. And here I'm in New Zealand. It's not foreign to me. I've been here before, but they've got their own little quirks, their own ways of doing things. The waters here around Picton are quite deep. Like the anchorages are deep. Some of the anchorages are 20, 30 metres deep. So you're really struggling to anchor in some of these places, and you're anchoring right on the edge, and these bloody Kiwis, they throw a pick in into 8 to 10 meters, 12 meters, and then they reverse up and tie off to the edge of the fjords, and sometimes with only meters to the rock. So you really got to make sure you've got a solid pick in, and the weather conditions are not going to make you drag and do damage to your boat. Found some of the moorings aren't all that great, so you tend to have some really good moorings, and then there's some just privately held shit moorings, which I find unusual in a place like New Zealand, where the government seems as woke as fuck, and you think they would have had a rule or a standard for everything in this place, but there's things that just slip through the cracks, and I would have thought, quality moorings of a standard would have been almost essential when you're hanging $1 million boat off some of these moorings. But so far, I've been a little bit surprised. But yeah, it's a beautiful place. Like, if you're going to come sail in New Zealand. If you can't sail over here, just fly in and hire a boat. You can hire a boat in the Bay of Islands. Probably hire a yacht down this way as well. Marlborough Sounds, where I am. It is absolutely spectacular. It's I think Dorval Island, which is to the north of Nelson, get some really insane weather up there, but it's one of the prettiest spots I've been to in a long time. It's lush and green, the anchorages were great, the rivers were beautiful. I mean, there were some little challenging tidal areas and very shallow spots you had to get through. I mean, I had to have 100 mil under the keel to slip across a bank on the change of tides there. So yeah, I think that was a bit challenging, but that was because I had a relatively low tide. But yeah, these but yeah, that's what sometimes what you got to do to access places, and maybe you just need a little bit of momentum as well sometimes. If you do push in, you just got to push through the gravel or mud sometimes to keep going. Places like Hervey Bay in Queensland, where I often just push through the mud just to get to where I need to go. But yeah, depending on your boat, you've got to be careful. This is a 12-ton aluminium bulldozer, and I can afford to do that. But if you're in a fiberglass, plastic, fantastic, lightweight cruiser or race boat, you can't afford to touch. You'll end up stripping fiberglass off or even snapping something. So yeah, each boat has its merits. But yeah, welcome to Trevor White Sailing and Tintin. Hopefully we can talk again. I think I'm just going to go and do a bit of research on Fiji. Maybe you might be interested in Fiji and do a bit of research also. It looks absolutely spectacular, and a local chap here, the marina manager over at Nelson, gave me quite a few sailing guides for the area, so I'm going to go through those as well, and fill my brain with lots of useful facts, and hopefully some of them prove useful for customs and immigration. But yeah, hope you guys have a good night or good morning, depending on where you are in the world. And over time, let's share some tips and tricks, maybe have some nice drinking spots, and stay safe. Fair winds, safe seas.